On the 5th day of October, Halloween gave to me 5 reeds of wolfing, 4 drunken uncles, 3 werewolf colonies, 2 spooky sisters, and a psycho who killed Janet Lee. Hey everybody, welcome back to the 31 Days of Halloween here at Legion Podcasts. This is my little piece of this, where each and every darn day we are doing a look at a different horror film that I'm watching. I assembled my list of 31 movies for the month, and I am sharing all of that with you. And I hope likewise. Feel free on any of our social media channels, whether it's Instagram or Facebook or Twitter. Drop me a line, let me know what you're watching. That's what it's there for, and I'm very curious to see how people get up to their own celebrations this time of year. I'm very excited about the list I have assembled, and today has brought us to a movie that I haven't seen since I was a kid, which is why it made it to this list, partly because I wanted to wrap up our series of werewolf movies with something that was a little unusual, you know, not do the typical American Werewolf in London kind of thing. And so I went with 1961's Curse of the Werewolf, a Hammer film production. This stars Oliver Reed in all of his barrel-chested glory as the werewolf of the title. And it's kind of an interesting, oddball kind of werewolf movie. If you've never seen it, it has all the lush Technicolor goodness that you kind of want from a Hammer production. It is directed by Terrence Fisher, the estimable Terrence Fisher, who did a lot of the great Hammer films. Did Horror of Dracula and Curse of Frankenstein and just an incredible run of movies. The Gorgon he did, which I like quite a bit. Brides of Dracula, which I have said before is maybe my favorite of the Hammer vampire films, even though it doesn't star Christopher Lee. Brides of Dracula is really, really good. So it's directed by a guy who knows what the hell he's doing. It stars Oliver Reed, who you probably may best remember as sort of the fat old cantankerous guy from Gladiator. Oliver Reed, in my mind, lives as this sort of caricature of the English alcoholic actor. And in this movie, he is certainly acting for the back row. But that, you know, this is a movie that's 60 years old now, which is hard to believe. But sure enough, this film is 60. And so I would argue that a certain amount of leeway ought to be granted to movies that are still kind of in the wake of, Marlon Brando is kind of the guy that that made modern acting happen. He was one of the more naturalistic actors to come down the acting pike. And so, this still suffers from that very stagey kind of acting that a lot of old films possess. But I would argue that for the weirdness of the plot, that kind of works. So this isn't just, this dude got bit by a wolfman and is now a wolfman himself. No. This has one of the more interesting sort of cinematic origin stories of a werewolf where, you know, and spoilers, obviously, for Curse of the Werewolf, and we'll be spoiling all these movies, so fair warning. And there's some new stuff coming, I'll be sure to warn you, like, hey, when we talk about this new thing that you might not have seen yet, spoilers will be addressed at that time. But for the sake of this one, like I said, 60 years, statute of limitations is up, I'm afraid, on spoilers for this guy. So what happens is there's this beggar who rolls into town. It's all set in Spain. Rolls into this little Spanish town and is like, hey, how about a little, something for the effort? And the people at Tao tell him, hey, look, we ain't got no money. If you want some money, you go ask the rich asshole who's in charge of everything. But I got to warn you, he ain't going to give you anything either. It's probably best if you just don't go. And the beggar ignores this and instead does actually go to the chateau of the guy who runs the town, the lord of the town, I suppose. And it happens to be a wedding feast. And so they do the usual aristocratic shit to this beggar where, you know, they throw some food on the floor and throw some wine at him and tease him for being poor and all that stuff. You know, stuff you do when you're rich. Stuff if I were rich, I would do for sure. Is make people dance for my benefit and whatnot. But in this case, the new bride is more sympathetic. And it's like, hey, don't tease this poor beggar, man. He does. It's not his fault that he's poor. So, you know, show him a little consideration. And the Lord is like, oh, well, would you like him as your pet? And she's like, yeah, whatever. Just don't make him feel like an asshole. And the downside of this bride is that she kind of forgets once she's, you know, saved the guy in the short term, she kind of forgets about him. And so what happens is they just throw this guy into the jail under this manor. You know, like every house had cells at the time, if you were rich enough to keep your enemies and political rivals and whatnot. And so they dump this guy in a jail. Meanwhile, there is a serving girl who is mute, and the head of the manor in his old age is hitting on her. And she rejects his advances, and so she is also thrown into prison. And this is much, much later, years after they've thrown the beggar into this jail cell. And the beggar has become this just animalistic dude who just eats and you know, ogles the poor servant girl, who is then thrown into the cell with him. And the implication is that he rapes her. And then a child is the result of this sexual assault. This child is adopted by some other more well-to-do Spaniards. And this child grows up to be Oliver Reed, who at a certain age, as a kid, starts to manifest these kind of wolfman qualities where he gets fangs and tries to escape. And the idea is that he was born out of sin and thus possesses this animal nature that he can't escape. And the whole premise is that the only thing that can save him is the true love of someone else that's not a parent or anything. It's got to be somebody that loves him that can quell this animal spirit. And as luck would have it, Oliver Reed gets a job working on the estate of a guy who has a daughter who's going to be wed to a nobleman, but Oliver Reed and this girl fall in love, and just when he's pretty sure that he's going to wolf out, it turns out that this woman kind of saves him. But naturally, it's a horror movie. One thing leads to another. She is kind of wrested away from him, and so he is left to his own devices. And there begins the wolf story. And probably my biggest complaint with Curse of the Werewolf is that there's not that much werewolf. There's a whole lot of curse, not a lot of werewolf to Curse of the Werewolf. It's not a bad movie, don't get me wrong. It's kind of weird and it's entertaining, and Oliver Reed is a lot of fun because I just happen to like Oliver Reed. I think he's a fun actor, and he's so intense in this movie. There's one point where he just throws himself on the ground and pounds the earth, and it's a real something. There's another fun scene where he and his buddy go to a house of ill repute to do some drinking and some, you know, philandering with ladies. And, you know, he ends up kind of wolfing out. Here's another fun fact about 1960s era Wolfman is they rarely eviscerate the way that modern werewolves do, where, you know, when they see a werewolf body, or a werewolf victim body in most modern werewolf movies. They're like, oh, he must have been attacked by animals. You know, this victim was ripped to shreds. Back in the old Hammer days, the wolfman would grow hair and fangs and claws and stuff, and then just choke you. Just choke you right out. So that's kind of funny. And that happens at the brothel / House of Ill Repute, where Oliver Reed may or may not, as the movie plays a little coy with it, have choked to death said woman of ill repute and also his buddy. And there's a great scene where some local law officials show up to ask Oliver Reed, you know, like, hey, we know that you were at this place with your friend, and just curious, what happened? We heard you left a little early. Was everything okay? You didn't happen to, you know, strangle a couple of people while you were there, did you? And he's like, what? Why? No. Wait. What happened? Is he all right? Is my friend? Is he all right? And you're like, no, man. You choked him to death when you wolfed out. But yeah, it's a fun movie. It's not necessarily a great movie, but it's a good time. And if you've never seen Curse of the Werewolf, I definitely recommend it. I would say that, you know, one of the big upsides of the movie is that it's only 93 minutes long, and that don't hurt. So, you know, it's a great kind of throwback film. It's not, you know, the werewolf transformation stuff is a little silly by today's standards. You know, it's more the wolf man than, you know, modern practical effects. And by modern, I mean stuff that happened in the 80s. But it's good. It's a good movie, and Oliver Reed's a lot of fun in it, and it's Terrence Fisher directing, so it's filled with a lot of kind of shots at dusk that are really colorful and lush and feel really nice. You know, is it Fisher's best work? No, it's not. Yeah, like I said, the aforementioned Brides of Dracula is way better. Horror of Dracula is way better. But in terms of Hammer kind of almost said staking a claim in the werewolf genre. Stakes, Hammer. Anyway, it's an interesting foray into this sort of subgenre of horror films in that it doesn't follow the typical rules. It kind of invents some of its own lore, which I think is kind of interesting. The whole stuff with the beggar at the beginning of the movie is maybe the most interesting stuff because it really kind of digs into some, you know, class warfare kind of stuff that was unusual but interesting for the time. And, you know, it has a typically, as most werewolf movies do, has a typically kind of downer of an ending that happens pretty suddenly. I wish there were a little more werewolfing, but I also, worth saying, I really like the look of the werewolf in this movie. It's very much like, hey, we're going to put this mask on you and kind of build this around your existing big head. But I really like the look of it, and Oliver Reed makes a good werewolf because he's a very physical actor to begin with, and so when he's kind of scampering around the rooftops and stuff, you know, as most wolves do, climbing walls and scaling, you know, adobe buildings and whatnot. But it's good. It's good. It's a fun time, and I would recommend it on that level. Is it the best movie we're going to talk about for this 31 days? Absolutely not. Is the worst? Probably not. We got other things to talk about that are probably not as good. Some new stuff that I haven't seen yet that probably won't live up to the high standards of A Curse of the Werewolf. But it's a good time, and especially if you like Hammer movies and want to be a bit of a completionist like I do. I do enjoy the Hammer films quite a lot. And so I'm always excited to see one that I haven't seen in a while or never seen before. That is a small list at this point. But, you know, I'd seen Curse of the Werewolf before. But like I said, I was a kid. I was an impressionable young man. And when I watched it, I didn't recall much of the movie at all beyond the kind of last 10 minutes of the movie. And I think for good reason. I think, you know, the lead up to the big climax can be a little long-winded at times. It's still pretty, but, you know, push come to shove. Could I have taken a nap in the middle act of that movie and been fine? Probably. I could have catnapped for about 15, been totally okay, but, you know, don't let my bad behavior spoil your good time. The Curse of the Werewolf is still fun, and you ought to see it. But I feel that way about all Hammer movies. I think every Hammer film production, to one degree or another, is worth a look. But anyway, that's Curse of the Wolfman. As always, I hope you enjoy these sort of minor reflections, mini reviews on the movies that I'm looking at for Halloween. And more importantly, like I said at the upfront, I would love to hear from you guys and let me know what you're watching, what your lists look like. And while we're at it, a couple of things happen around the old Legion Podcast Network. If and you haven't been listening to the main feed, there is a new show called The Heart of Horror with me and the lovely and talented Kate Pollock, where we discuss horror movies in relation to love and relationships, and we look forward to hearing your stories about love and relationships. And you will be, if you haven't already heard that first episode, it should be landing pretty soon. Also, check out all the other shows and make sure you're subscribing to the main feed, because that's where all kinds of fun stuff is going to be popping off here in this wonderful month of October, the month that I personally look forward to all year long. This is when I have the most fun. I've been doing decorations and playing with digital projectors and putting spooky girls in my windows. It's just a wonderful time. So, you guys, thanks so much for listening. Thanks for supporting Legion Podcast. As always, you can check out our Patreon, patreon.com/Legion Podcasts, where you can support us for $1 or $2 a month. And you get some free stuff over there, some early access to some shows that only exist on the Patreon, and it helps keep the lights on around here. So we certainly appreciate your patronage, and I feel like it's a pretty good value proposition. You get some good stuff there. So anyway, that's all for now. Come back tomorrow when we are going to put werewolves in the rearview mirror and turn our attention to some other frightful features here on the 31 Days of Halloween. In the meantime, by all means, stay very spooky. It is the time of year, after all. And have yourselves a wonderful rest of the day. We'll see you back here tomorrow for film number 6 in our 31 Days of October. See you then.